We had an order here of things that we were trying to go through. Of course, I think in the Israeli army, I was told they say a tochnit is a basis l'shinui. When you have a outline of a program, it's really a basis for change. At least you have something to change from. You know, you have some basis. So I want to just take a short divergence in, I guess I could call it, in Yonei D'Yoymo. I understand that this article, which I'm using as a base for these discussions, caused quite a ruckus amongst some of the people to whom it wasn't really addressed. It was addressed to our people, to our communities, people who are committed to Yiddishkeit and people who are sincerely concerned about those that are drifting, and some advice. There was a number of people who saw this since it was appeared in a newspaper, and they were up in arms. And they were actually the people who this discussion is referring to, of course not by name and not specifically, and they were very offended, taken aback. They took issues with the gentle consideration of the possibility that their claims are excuses rather than intellectually valid tainus. They were very annoyed with the use of word excuses. And I think I was very careful here just to put a balance in that. You know, they may be excuses, they may not. They didn't, you know, but they were very annoyed by that, which, of course, all annoyance shows how serious the issue is and how... How they're very, you know, they're sensitive because they know deep down what the truth is. And then there was a major annoyance of the concept of validating people. And the word that was countered with this validation was manipulation. In other words, you are manipulating us. You are advocating manipulating us. And, you know, make me feel good about myself. Then you'll be in the position to brainwash me, you know, and to convince me of the ideas that you're espousing. And that was extremely offensive. I only heard this secondhand, so I'm sure there were a lot of other offensive things here, Baruch Hashem. But, you know, what I have on my desk there, I'm not allowed to say from whom, but it says, you know, you have enemies? Good. That means you stand up for something. So anyway, but I'd like to address just one of these issues, which I think is very, very significant, and it's sorely lacking in this piece. And I realized it only after the fact, only after these responses, these reactions were heard. And that is Rebbe Elchanan. I don't know where, I'm sure it's today in the Kovetz Ma'amorim. It used to be at the back of the Kovetz Ha'oros in Yevomis, where they first printed these Ma'amorim for Rebbe Elchanan Wasserman. And in the first one, I believe, he spoke there about how there could be a mitzvah of emunah. He says, how can you be mitzvah a person to believe something? Either he does or he doesn't. You know, it's not the type of stuff that's given to commandments, to commands. And he says the very famous thing. He says that, it's a whole arichas, but what I remember of it, I haven't seen it for ages, but what I remember of it is that he says that if a person would be born with adult intelligence, the moment he comes into this world, he would look around and say, "Su'ei nechem la'moroim, ura'ei mi bora'ele." It's poshut. the world on any level of its complexity. Not to mention that I heard, the latest thing I heard is that if they were to line up all the DNA in a person, it would go around the circumference of the world 300,000 times. That's the complexity. I don't know what that means, but sure, a lot going on inside this accidental human body, you know. So, but if you look around the world, if you were born with adult intelligence, then you'd sue Nechama. There's a Boiri. There has to be a Boiri. It's not Shaykh. The problem is, we're born without the intelligence. And we start first the fulfillment of desire. The baby cries. The baby's hungry. The baby wants. The baby needs. The baby desires. And our desires become predominant in the early ages, early stages of life. Like it says, Ki yetzalei ha'odam ra min u'rov. And Memela, by the time we get adult intelligence, there's a conflict between the realization, which should be obvious and taken for granted, that there's a Borei Olam, and which is conflicted because it's constricting the desire that I have to fulfill all my desires. A person who has desires, who has strong desires, doesn't want any authority around to curb those desires, to tell those desires when to desire and when not, when to act and when not, when to eat and when not, when to do and when not, because that's the nature of desire. I want to be free. Mimela, there's that conflict. And therefore, a person is meshuchad. It's as if he took sheichad when it comes to seeing the truth. So Rabbi Chanan says, obviously, the mitzvah of emunah is to work on those blinding factors which blind us, which fool us, which attempt to confuse us about the obvious. And mimela, he says, once a person removes those, then the obvious will be obvious once again. And I think that that's really the same thing with this manipulative concept, in the words of the critics, of validation. We're not looking to convince anybody of anything in reality. We're really looking to help the person free himself from those things that confuse him from thinking rationally. Because the rational thinking about this world can only lead to the conclusions that Yadus has presented to us. That there is a Boire, that there is a benevolent Boire, and if there is a benevolent Boire, that benevolent Boire must have revealed to us the purpose of this massive creation that he created. And we happen to have access to recorded testimony, generation after generation, to public events which record, which where millions of eyewitnesses participated in this revelation, saw for themselves the one who had identified himself as the creator with all the miracles he did in Mitzrayim, revealing himself and saying, hey, this is the purpose for which I've created the world. Here it is. Now everything comes full circle. Now the chesed, the massive chesed of creation, which is obviously that it existed because of the complexity and the intricacy of everything that we see, and even what we know today just confirms it even more and more and more in extreme terms. And therefore, if there is a creation, a purposeful act, there has to be a purpose. And it would be the cruelest thing in the world to create us and put us in this situation with the ability to even recognize that there is a creation and not to let us know what the purpose is. That would be the ultimate frustration. If you think we have frustrations in life, we can't imagine the frustration of knowing that we were created for a purpose and having no clue what that purpose is. In fact, that frustration has motored so much of the progress in society throughout the millennia. That's why people always were searching. That's why people were traveling. That's why they discovered, Columbus discovered America. I don't know who discovered America. And that's why this, and that's why that, and that's why, because we're all searching. We're trying to make meaning, make sense out of this whole thing. And even those that couldn't make sense, but they spent their lives trying. We, Baruch Hashem, were fortunate not just to have the claim or the thought or the idea or the pretext, but the eyewitness testimony passed down from generation to generation, accurately recorded throughout those 3,300 years. And now we have the sense of the obvious truth. There is a creator. The creator created the world for a purpose, and he revealed that purpose to Klal Yisrael. And we today have access to that revelation as it was accurately passed down from generation to generation to this very day. Now, the case is obvious. The case is, as we like to say, beyond any reasonable doubt. Nothing is beyond the shadow of a doubt except shadows, because you can't. You start to think beyond the shadow of a doubt, all you're going to do is see shadows. But beyond any reasonable doubt, and all we want to do with this, and I quote, manipulative validation, is to free the person, make the person feel good enough about himself to want to open his mind, to want to open his eyes and ears, to want to listen, to want to pay attention. Because that's really what happens. The person doesn't have this very good feeling about himself. He mistakenly in our society feels that the way he's going to feel good about himself is by the hedonistic pleasures that he's going to indulge in. And he's going to think, the more I indulge, the more I'll feel. He knows something doesn't feel good, but he doesn't know why it doesn't feel good. And the reason we don't feel good, and most of us at times don't feel good, because we haven't accessed the maximum of that spiritual connection. But we don't know how to interpret that. So we think, I have so many frustrated desires. I need this, I need that, I want this, I crave this, I like this, I like this. I've seen this, I want to do this, I want to copy that, I want to do this, I want to act like this. And then, and really all these things tell me, they reinforce the idea that I don't feel good about myself. Because if I need everything that society offers, and we live in the, today we live in some of the pleasure capitals of the world. You know, I guess New York City is a pleasure capital. Forgive me, Los Angeles is a pleasure capital. Miami is a pleasure capital. I'm not sure about Chicago. Yeah, what do you say? Maybe, I don't know, but we live in pleasure capitals, and therefore we indulge and indulge and indulge and indulge in all of these pleasures, and they convince us that we really don't feel good about ourselves, because I can't feel good about myself when I'm totally dependent on the food I eat, the drink I drink, the fun I have, the thrills I get, the expressions and intense pursuits of all the physical desires that I have, because I'm constantly needing the outside. If I don't have from the outside, that means there's nothing on inside. The inside is empty, and I'm constantly trying to fill it up with all kinds of materialistic things. So all the materialistic existence that we exist helps to send the message even further that I'm really trash. There's nothing there, because if I feel good about myself, I don't need this. So all that we're suggesting is that to a person who has reached that level of invalidation within himself because of everything that he's been exposed to and everything that he is engaged in and indulged in, all we're asking is, let's make that person feel a little bit better about himself. And then let him think. Nobody's asking anyone to believe. We don't want belief. It's not about belief. The Torah tells us, V'yodata, we say it in Aleinu three times a day, V'yodata hayoim. Know it. It's knowledge. It's knowledge. There's historic knowledge. There's a Messiah. There's testimony that has been passed down. And there's endless evidence to the validity of this testimony. The only thing is that it has to be v'hashevoisa elevovecho. We have to constantly return it to our hearts, because our hearts crave other things. And I'm suggesting, it's not bimashmos of those words, but I'm suggesting that one of the psychodynamics of that is that as I crave more and more the indulgence of the world, I begin to think less and less about my own self, my own validity, my own self-worth, my own self-esteem. And therefore, I'm in that matzav, I just have to crave more and more and more, because it's so empty. And when you can release a person from that and make him recognize that's what did Altum Slabotka do? He followed Rabbi Yisrael Salanta's advice. When he met Rabbi Yisrael Salanta, he told him the way you make a yeshiva is lahachyos ruach shvolim ulahachyos lev nidkoyim. Uplift these downtrodden, these broken spirits. That's put some life into them. And when you uplift people, they start to feel good about themselves and all of the material. And then it was the haskalah. I don't know what level of, there was plenty of taiva in that too, but it was maybe with a different nusach. But then all of that comes about, and I feel nothing. I'm nothing. I need all of that. I need that. I need that. I need that. I'm nothing. I'm nothing. I need more, and I need more, and I need more. And uplift them, and then they'll connect with the Tzelem Elikim, and they'll realize that we were created with Tzelem Elikim. They'll realize that we have a special relationship with the Borei Olam. They'll realize that the Rabbeinu Shel Olam revealed himself at Har Sinai with that Yishokeini Menshikos Piyu, with that kiss, Pe El Pe, where he showed the ultimate love that he had for Klal Yisrael. Rashi says in Parshas Kisiso that when it says, Aluchas Maase Elikim, so Rashi says a moshel, just like a person who has a trade, his ein asokov ella, his only thing is in this trade. He says ba'akodesh baruch hu, he says aloshen ein shashuv ella b'Torah. Hakodesh baruch hu has one delight in this world, and that's the Torah. And you know what the Torah says he did with that Torah? He gave it to us. The Torah calls the Torah beis kleichem dosoi shehoyo mishtasheya babuchol yoim. That delight, maybe the delight came from being masik shmeitz ali b'dehilchosa, I don't know. I don't know what that was, but on a certain level, he gave it to Klal Yisrael. The greatest expression of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's love to Klal Yisrael was he gave us that Torah. So we have this Torah. We have this purpose of creation. We were created B'Tzelem Elokim. The more we realize these things and the love, how validating is that love from HaKadosh Baruch Hu to Klal Yisrael? What does that mean? What does that mean? That and someone showed me a medrash the other day. He told it to me. I didn't see it inside. But where it's clear from the medrash that, oh, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, if he delivers, I must get it again. Believe neither. I'll get it. I'll try to get it tonight. But he delivers the geulah. He delivers something to one member of Klal Yisrael. It's gilu he delivered to the whole Klal Yisrael. Because that love that he has is for each individual is the love of the entire Klal Yisrael is expressed in the relationship with each individual. How validating that is. How good I feel about myself. And when I feel good about myself, and when I don't need everything else to give me that temporary relief, and now I start to feel good about myself, so now I can open my mind to think. I'm not dependent. I'm not mechur. I'm not sold. I'm not addicted to all of that nonsense out there. And I can start to think. And when the mind thinks, the conclusions are poshut. And nobody's interested in telling a person what to think. And nobody's interested in telling a person, believe. And nobody's saying, believe me because I said so. There's no such thing. There's no such thing, believe me because I said so. Believe me. Look for yourself. But anyone who looks with an open mind will see. If we would be created with that adult intelligence, without all the blinders and the confusion and the desires and the overwhelming passions that drive us nuts, then we would see the reality. The reality is poshut. The reality of Klal Yisrael is poshut. The survival of Klal Yisrael alone and the fact that we read from the same Sefer Torah and study the same Gemara and the same Mesorah is in itself the greatest testimony to the Amitius HaTorah. There's no such thing in all of creation that under the worst of circumstances, you think this United Nations with this other business and whoever else was behind it is something. This is garbage. The Security Council has no power. The most powerful nations of the world, the superpowers of the world, stacked and invested everything in their koiches to destroy Klal Yisrael. On Hanukkah to destroy the Torah, on Purim to destroy the Klal Yisrael, the goof of the Klal Yisrael, and every place in between, whether it was Amalek or all the other enemies. And they're all in the museums. Some are footnotes in history books. And here we are. Here we are. Look around. Look what we're studying. Look what we have in the Aron Kodesh. Look what we're doing. Look what we dedicate our lives to. Where? What? And we're still here to tell the story. There's nobody like that. It's mind-boggling. It's mind-boggling. When I think it was Louis Pasteur, Pascal. I'm sorry. I don't know the difference between these people. When Louis XIV asked the philosopher Pascal, I think that's the way it goes, to prove to him the supernatural, so his response was very terse. The Jews, your majesty, the Jews. That was his proof. That's the proof. To anyone who opens his eyes, to anyone who unburdens his taiva, to anyone who can feel good enough about himself for a moment not to need all of the things that he has to take it from the outside to confuse him and blind him and prevent him from seeing anything, because he's afraid if he sees the truth he's going to have to compromise these momentary thrills which are really killing him and killing his own worth for himself and his own self-esteem. So he thinks about it, he says, look, the Klal Yisrael, there's a Boir Yoylem. This little bit medrash, with these people sitting here, with what you people are engaged in every day, with what we have in that Aron Kodesh and standing next to it, with everything that we have in the back over there, all of this, this is it. The Jews, your majesty, the Jews, that's it. But the problem is that we're blinded. Anyway, so Bekitza, my answer is, I don't know if they're listening, I doubt it. My answer to these people who are critical of the manipulative tactics of validation, all we're trying to do is to restore the balance of judgment. So with a balanced judgment, everybody will make his own decision.